Welcome to High Strangeness, where we ask questions and explore all that is strange and unexpected in our reality.
Welcome to High Strangeness. My name is Tony, and thank you for coming along for episode number 9. Today, I'm excited to run down a quick summary of what I think have been the most important UAP and UFO events over the last 100 years. I have my top 10, and I want to run through these from the earliest to the most recent. And so let's get right into it. My event number 1 is something that happened way back in 1938, and because there probably won't be many of you who will actually remember this, let's learn a little bit about it right now.
The War of the Worlds was a Halloween episode of the radio series The Mercury Theater on the Air, directed and narrated by Orson Welles as an adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel The War of the Worlds that was performed and broadcast live at 8 p.m. on October 30, 1938 over the CBS radio network. The episode is famous for inciting a panic by convincing some members of the listening audience that a Martian invasion was taking place. The episode begins with an introductory monologue based closely on the opening of the source novel, after which the program takes on the format of an evening of typical radio programming being periodically interrupted by news bulletins. The first few bulletins interrupt a program of live music and are relatively calm reports of unusual explosions on Mars, followed by a seemingly unrelated report of an unknown object falling on a farm in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. The crisis escalates dramatically when an on-scene reporter at Grover's Mill describes creatures emerging from what is evidently an alien spacecraft. The aliens employ a heat ray against police and onlookers, and the radio correspondent describes the attack in increasing panic until his audio feed abruptly goes dead. This is followed by a rapid series of news updates detailing the beginning of a devastating alien invasion and the U.S. military's futile efforts to stop it. The first portion of the episode climaxes with a live report from a rooftop in Manhattan, from where a correspondent describes citizens fleeing from poison smoke released by towering Martian war machines until he coughs and falls silent. After a short break by the program, the broadcast continues. The second portion of the show shifts to a more conventional radio drama format that follows a survivor played by Wells dealing with the aftermath of the invasion and the ongoing Martian occupation of Earth. The final segment lasts for about 16 minutes, and like the original novel, concludes with the revelation that the Martians have been defeated by microbes rather than by humans.
So even though this event didn't really involve any UFOs or sightings, it was happening in the minds of many people, and that served to maybe set the tone for how the public might frame the claims of UFOs and sightings going forward. Now, our next event took place just a few years later, and it was something that was being experienced worldwide by our military, and that was what began to be called the Foo Fighters. Now, the first time I heard the term Foo Fighters, it was for a rock band that started in Seattle, Washington in 1994. But what I didn't realize was that the band's name actually came from an interesting UFO sighting or sightings back in World War II. Let's take a look.
Originally, a lot of these pilots mistook these for enemy planes, but as they got a good look at them, it was clear they were something else. Foon pilots were reporting strange glowing lights. Some white, some orange or red, or even just as a fiery ball. They were capable of making impossible maneuvers in the sky, and then could vanish without a trace. Now, even though these things were seen throughout the entire war, there was a higher concentration of sightings in 1944, with a lot of them over Europe. Another interesting thing is, pilots, after seeing them as often as they did, really described them as not interfering in any way or acting dangerously around the fleet, but seemed to be mostly observing and flying around in almost a fun way. If anything, though, some pilots started to consider the Foo Fighters as more of a nuisance. And the interesting thing is, even though the war ended in September of 1945, the Foo Fighters continued to be seen in the skies for years after.
Foo Fighters. So for some people who may be new to the UAP conversation, may question or wonder if this is just a new or a recent phenomena. But here we have well-documented occurrences of objects flying about with the aerial agility that we can't even match today. Now, next and number 3 on my list is Admiral Richard Byrd.
Born on October 25, 1888, Richard Evelyn Byrd Jr. was an American naval officer and was a pioneering American aviator, polar explorer, and organizer of polar logistics. Aircraft flights in which he served as a navigator and expedition leader crossed the Atlantic Ocean, a segment of the Arctic Ocean, and a segment of the Antarctic Plateau. He is also known for discovering Mount Sidley, the largest dormant volcano in Antarctica. Byrd said that his expeditions had been the first to reach both the North Pole and the South Pole by air. But one of the most amazing accounts provided by Admiral Byrd was his encounter on one of his expeditions. Listen to this segment created by the History Channel.
In his explorations, Admiral Byrd allegedly came upon something highly unexpected.
This story is said to come from his diaries, not his published account of the trip, but something he held back and then later was suppressed by government authorities that found it frightening.
In his diary, which was discovered by his son after his death, Admiral Byrd tells an extraordinary story.
Admiral Byrd heard there was an entrance to the center of the Earth through the South Pole. And he took planes into the South, under the South Pole. And when he did that, he discovered that as he flew over the pole, suddenly he's looking at things that shouldn't be there. I mean, it was temperate. His squadron flew under the Earth, into the Earth.
It turns into this lush and green area, and he can't even believe his eyes. But that's just the beginning of his extraordinary story. He tells how all of a sudden he starts to see a shimmering rainbow city that's made of crystal.
He tells how his plane is taken control of when he suddenly sees these flying disc-shaped objects around him. That lead him to land on the ground. After which he is taken to a cavernous type of area where he meets a being that he refers to as the Master. The Master tells him that they are highly disappointed in what humans are doing with nuclear weapons and what is going on the surface of the planet. Then Admiral Byrd is told that they hope and want humanity to ultimately stop this, and that this should be communicated to our leadership. If Admiral Byrd's secret diary is authentic, it could reveal that there are highly advanced beings living inside the Earth and that they are monitoring us. After returning, Admiral Byrd was eager to share his story, but was ordered to remain silent and to never speak publicly about this, and that everything about this is classified.
Admiral Richard Byrd. So not only were his experiences very interesting, they opened the door up to several other conspiracy topics like the Hollow Earth theory, North Pole restricted flight areas, Antarctic hidden bases, and Operation High Jump, which are all amazing topics on their own. But let's jump forward a little, and let's go to number 4 on my list, which is Roswell, New Mexico.
Roswell is probably the most famous UFO incident of all time. It occurred in 1947, just outside of the town of Roswell, New Mexico. What had happened was that a rancher was out on his property when he stumbled upon this crashed wreckage on the ground. Later, he would describe it as having seen burn marks on the ground and what looked like if something had slammed into the ground. He had also seen metallic parts scattered all around the site. After that, the farmer who owned the ranch called the military, who then came to pick it up. A local reporter then found out about this and contacted the Air Force, who then gave the statement that they had recovered a crashed flying disc. But a day later, the military recanted the whole story, stating that the debris was just part of a weather balloon and was no big deal. Now here you see Major Jesse Marcel, who the day before had been there to see the debris and, according to his family years later, gathered some of that debris, metallic pieces, and brought it home to show his family. Later, they would claim that the material was tinfoil-like, but if crumpled up, would recoil back into its original shape. Later, Marcel's family would also state that Jesse Marcel said that the debris that he is showing in this picture was nothing like what he saw on that field that day. But because he was following orders, he said what he was told to say. Later reports came out that there were witnesses who claimed to see small alien bodies. But it was the military that quickly whisked those bodies and debris away to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So, from that day on, and until now, the government has continually dismissed all these accounts. Which, because of that, in UFO circles, has laid the foundation for conspiracy. Now, as for Roswell, they have continued to embrace that event, and even today celebrate everything about it.
Roswell. Not only is there a museum and visitor center in Roswell, there have been countless documentaries, specials, articles, and even TV and cable shows that have hit the screens about Roswell. I think Roswell will always be a cornerstone in this UAP subject. But, interesting enough, even after all this time, there continues to be a lot of secrecy about Roswell by our government, and I wonder why. Next, and because of the rash and high numbers of UFO sightings that continue to happen from the 1940s and on, the government attempted to create an agency that would look at and study these claims. And so from 1947 through 1969, we had Project Blue Book. Project Blue Book had two goals, namely to determine if UFOs were a threat to national security and to scientifically analyze UFO-related data.
This is how the process worked. Investigation of each UFO sighting was split up into three phases. The first phase was a preliminary investigation after receiving a report of a UFO sighting. Information was to be collected by the Air Force base nearest to the sighting that was reported. The information was relayed to the main headquarters of the Project Blue Book office located at Wright Field, now known as the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The first phase was designed to determine if the UFO was easily explainable. If the initial investigation proved unsuccessful, it moved on to the second phase. UFO sightings were more closely analyzed by the Project Blue Book office during the second phase. Analysis of the reported UFO was done so objectively and scientifically, and sometimes warranted the use of scientific facilities at the Air Force Base. The Secretary of the Air Force and Office of Information stepped in if the object couldn't be identified during the second phase. UFO sightings were organized into three different categories following an investigation. Identified objects were those that were able to be explained as a result of sufficient information. Objects were placed in the category of insufficient data if a certain element of the investigation was missing to positively identify the object. Examples of missing data or information included the direction in which the sighting occurred, where the sighting occurred, and at what time, or how it appeared or disappeared in the sky. If a UFO was placed in insufficient data, another investigation was conducted to rule out whether or not it was a threat to national security. There were 12,618 total UFO sightings reported during the lifespan of the program. Unfortunately, even as thousands of UFO reports were collected, analyzed, and filed, as a result of the Kindon Report, which concluded that the study of UFOs was unlikely to yield major scientific discoveries, and a review of the report by the National Academy of Sciences, Project Blue Book was terminated.
Now, the interesting thing is, even though it is pretty clear that this program, Project Blue Book, was really an effort to debunk sightings, suppress belief in this, and also push out of the public eye this whole UFO thing, there still were 12,000 plus reported sightings, with 701 of them deemed completely unidentified. And so I think that's pretty interesting in itself. So, the next extremely impactful event and person in the last century, in my opinion, is Bob Lazar. I remember when this guy came on the scene in the late 1980s, and I was floored by his claims when it all happened. Bob Lazar. Before this point, I believe the UFO and government connection was a possibility, maybe even a probability, but Bob Lazar's story and claims really moved the needle for many people about the likelihood of this, especially a place like Area 51, a secret military base for research and development that wasn't even known about before Bob Lazar came on scene.
Bob Lazar, the man who told the world. In the late 1980s, a figure emerged who would become one of the most controversial and intriguing in the realm of ufology and extraterrestrial technology. Bob Lazar claimed to have worked on reverse engineering alien spacecraft at a secret site near Area 51, known as S4. His assertions, particularly about the existence and use of element 115, Muscovium, as a power source for these crafts, have sparked debates, skepticism, and fascination for decades. Bob Lazar was not a household name until November 1989, when he appeared in a televised interview with investigative reporter George Knapp on Las Vegas local news. Concealing his identity initially, Lazar detailed his alleged work with the United States government on extraterrestrial technology. His background was as mysterious as his claims. Lazar professed to hold degrees from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and the California Institute of Technology, Caltech. although there are no records to support these claims. According to Lazar, his role at S4 involved studying an alien spacecraft to understand its propulsion system. This system, he claimed, was powered by an antimatter reactor using element 115, which at the time had not been synthesized or officially recognized by the scientific community. Lazar described the element as the fuel source that allowed for the creation of a gravitational field, enabling the craft to fly and to travel vast distances through space at incredible speeds.
Now, there's a lot more about Bob Lazar that you can research and watch about, and his contribution to the UFO topic. Although he remained out of the public eye for 20-some or maybe 30 years, in the last few years, he has resurfaced as a journalist and filmmaker. Jeremy Corbell has encouraged him to do a few interviews and a recent documentary. Now, talking about Bob Lazar, it leads us to our very next impactful moment, and that is to talk about the discovery by the public and UFO community of the previously unknown Area 51.
Area 51, secret U.S. Air Force military installation located at Groom Lake in southern Nevada. For years, there was speculation about the installation, especially amid growing reports of UFO sightings in the vicinity. The site became known as Area 51, which was its designation on maps of the Atomic Energy Commission. Conspiracy theories gained support in the late 1980s, when a man alleging to have worked at the installation claimed that the government was examining recovered alien spacecraft. In 2013, the U.S. government officially acknowledged the existence of Area 51. That year, the National Security Archive at the George Washington University obtained through the Freedom of Information Act a formally classified CIA document that chronicled the history of the U-2 spy plane. According to the report, in 1955, the remote site, which included an airfield not used by the military since World War II, was selected in order to test the U-2. Test flights of that spy plane and subsequent aircraft accounted for many of the UFO sightings in the area. Now today, there is extreme security at Area 51, but that is understandable as rumors have continued over the years that this base has been involved in anti-gravity and even time travel experiments. Some have wondered if that location has continued the work that had been started by the Philadelphia experiment all those years ago. Either way, chances are that we will never know. As of today, in 2024, that base and its borders are highly protected, even with deadly force if necessary.
Amazing, right? Now we're moving into the last three impactful events, in my mind, over the last century. In the last few years, we have had video footage released, but more importantly, the acknowledgement that the government admits that these are true and identified aerial phenomena. And so, where do we go from here? We know that our government and the scientists don't really want to talk about it, but it's here and it's real. We don't know what it is, but it far exceeds our technological capabilities. So here we have four events that have made the biggest splash in recent years. The Tic Tac UAP incident, the gimbal footage, the GoFast video, and then the metallic orb in the Middle East. Number one, the Tic Tac in 2004.
Now, the public doesn't have actual footage of this, but there is amazing testimony of this event. There is a great 60 Minutes interview in 2021 that you can watch on this. It included retired Navy Commander David Fravor, who was the commander of the Fa-18F squadron on the US Nimitz. He and Lieutenant Commander Alex Dietrich were training with the Nimitz Carrier Strike Group about 100 miles southwest of San Diego, Favor told 60 Minutes. At the time, advanced radar on a ship that was a part of their training group, the U.S. Princeton, detected what operators called multiple anomalous aerial vehicles over the horizon, descending 80,000 feet in less than a second. Fravor and Dietrich diverted to investigate. Next, let's watch the gimbal video from 2015, GoFast video from 2015, and then the metallic orb video from 2023.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. The whole thing, dude. That's not LNS though, is it?
It's not. That is LNS, dude.
Well, if there's like
a little thing,
it's rotating.
Moving card?
No, I took an auto card.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Wow. Look at the fly.
Well, with this type of footage and the complete acknowledgement that our military and government don't know what those objects are, what else could finally be disclosed to help shed more light on all of this? And finally, what our government really knows about UAPs? Well, our next event in 2023 was where we had an official insider who turned whistleblower to expose more about what our government knows about all of this. That whistleblower's name was David Grush.
In 2023, David Grush, a United States Air Force USAF officer and a former intelligence official, was interviewed by various media outlets and testified in a U.S. House of Representatives congressional hearing. Grush claimed that conversations with unnamed officials led him to believe that the U.S. federal government maintains a secretive UFO, also known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena UAP Recovery Program, and is in possession of non-human spacecraft along with their dead pilots. In 2022, Grush filed a whistleblower complaint with the U.S. Office of the Intelligence Community Inspector General ISIG to support his plan to share classified information with the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. He also filed a complaint alleging retaliation by his superiors over a similar complaint he made in 2021. He also claims to have viewed documents reporting that Benito Mussolini's government recovered a non-human spacecraft in 1933, which the Vatican and the Five Eyes assisted the U.S. in procuring in 1944-1945. Grush claims secondhand knowledge that American citizens have been harmed and killed as part of their government's efforts to cover up the information.
With this earth-shattering revelation, the UFO community, some aspects of the public, and a portion of Congress now had what they needed to try and set up an official hearing. So, my number 10 impactful event, which was in 2023, was an official congressional hearing that was set up.
July 26, 2023, we had a historical and groundbreaking event. Three military veterans testified in Congress, which included a former Air Force intelligence officer who has claimed that the U.S. government has operated a secret, multi-decade, reverse engineering program of recovered vessels. He also had stated that the U.S. had recovered non-human biologics from alleged crash sites. Even though there were some questions and discussions about the potential for there to be extraterrestrial or recovered craft non-human pilots, much of the discussion centered around improving processes for reporting UAP sightings for phenomena in both air and water. So in the end, two very important things did happen in this hearing, and that was the open discussion about these once considered taboo topics. Lending to the hope that ongoing reporting and discussion can occur with less stigma than has been seen in the past. And then second, David Grush did offer to provide details of organizations and specific sites where many of these alleged foreign materials are being kept. Only obstacle at this point might just be the government providing the proper clearance and classification for government officials to be allowed to hear these details.
So this is all encouraging, but like always, what are or will be the forces that will fight against its disclosure? How far will things really be able to progress? Who knows? But it is an exciting time. Well, so there you go. Those are my 10 most impactful and important UAP and UFO related events of the last century. I hope you enjoyed that quick summary, and I encourage you to take a deeper look at these things. There are a lot of details that could really blow your mind. Anyway, so as I wrap up today, I want to thank you for joining me today, and I want to end by saying, remember, there's a lot of strange and unexpected out there. Keep your eyes, ears, and minds open, and until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to High Strangeness. This was a glance at some of the strange that exists in our reality.